enjoy a good squeeze.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And this is A Good Squeeze.
The show where we squeeze a little bit of that James Bond into our everyday lives.
As best we can.
Indeed. We try, and you know, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, this might be finally the first time we're hitting an anniversary movie. It's the 40th year anniversary of A View to a Kill.
And it is not the last time, either.
You're killing them. Knocking them out of the park.
Man.
Yeah, so 40th anniversary, View to a Kill. This one's special because, as mentioned, a large portion of this film takes place in San Francisco. And that's Margo's home away from home away from home.
That's right.
And we've recorded episodes in the past, previous, of our adventures in San Francisco. But now we watched the movie. Hey, we watched A View to a Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's kind of infamous or controversial or...
But see, I don't get why.
Exactly.
That's
what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, you set me up. No, you set that expectation. It's not your fault.
you did this to me.
Yeah, you let me know. You told me.
Sorry. What she's trying to say. What she's trying to say is I told her before we watched it that this movie is notoriously bad.
Yeah, that's it.
Or amongst the Bond fandom, not well-liked or well-received.
And typically, you know, I'm one to, you know, I'm like trying to recuperate from sounding dumb to now being smart. But now I just sound like a dumb person who thinks this is how smart people sound like. So all this to say, usually you'll be like, oh, the Bond fans love this one, but it's a little controversial. And I always end up not hating it, but being like, I don't think they should like it as much as they do.
Hmm.
This one, you were like, they hate it and it's controversial. And I was like, oh, it's probably pretty good then. And, well, should we dive in too?
Sure. This? And you know, is it controversial? I don't really think so. Maybe.
There's nothing controversial about it, okay? No, there's I don't think controversial is the word. It's just poorly received.
Yeah, I think that's the controversy.
Yeah.
Is people disagree. Yeah, you know, this one for me, I don't know why I like it a lot. I always have, in fact. And even as I got older and, like, you know, I went to film school and I was, like, attempting to be a snobby snob with some of my movies.
Attempting.
Yeah. I would watch this movie and be like, ugh, it's no good. But then I'd be like, but I'm going to watch it many, many, many times.
What do you like? Oh, go ahead.
I like, when I go on my sprees of falling asleep to James Bond movies because I find them very cozy. For me, this is one of the cozier ones. I find myself popping this one in quite a bit. Maybe it's the horses. Maybe it's the airship, Zorn's blimp.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
It relaxes me.
Yeah, like what do you call it? Old money pleasures in there. And those tend to kind of have a very cozy connotation, you know. A leather chair, as soft as a baby's bum, you know. A cocktail in the middle of the day, but the roaring fire, blah, 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 with my smoking jacket on. Horses, horse paintings. Would you like a horse painting?
An equestrian painting?
I would love a horse painting in our house.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know if you make horse paintings.
That's all I do.
Yeah.
I want the one that's above Zorin's desk, if there is one. I don't even know if there is one.
Jimmy Stewart had a watercolor of his horse from Henry Fonda.
Did you know Jimmy Stewart was offered the role of Mayday? No, I'm kidding.
About to be like, really?
I almost said Max Zorin.
Well, he would've... Zorin for me.
Yeah. Yeah, he could have been a good villain. Hey, James. I'm James. Yeah, that could be good.
That's good. That was like a nod at the Brothers Movie Factory.
Yeah, shout out Brothers Movie Factory.
But yeah, so it wasn't James Stewart who rode a horse in the movie or painted a horse, but it'd be cool to have a horse painting.
Yeah.
Moving on.
But A View to a Kill. Yeah, I Why do I like this one so much? I don't really know. It's one of those just like nostalgic love I have. I watched this one a lot when I was younger. You seem like you're chomping at the bit to say something.
I want to ask you a question. You said that when you were Mr. Snob, you didn't like it. Was it because you were a snob or because you didn't like the movie in general? What was it about? What is it about this movie that the movie snob will not like?
Mm-mm.
And if that isn't the issue, what is it that you didn't like about the movie?
Yeah, here you go, the movie snob. There's a lot of issues with this film. There's a lot of, there's so many shots of Roger Moore in one scene, but immediately very visible his stunt double in the next. I think his stunt double has more screen time than Roger Moore does.
Really?
In the action scenes.
Yeah. Roger Moore, he's wearing bell bottoms.
He was 57 in this movie, and he, well, was and is the oldest Bond yet. But,
really?
Yeah, at 57. I think Daniel Craig was 53 when he retired from the role.
Well, so then Roger Moore is still the oldest.
That's what I said.
Wait, okay. Thank you. Sorry.
And, you know, like, there were some limitations at that time. He wasn't maybe capable of doing some of these stunts and things, or maybe he didn't want to. Who knows?
He just got that beautiful face. He didn't want to scratch it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that got to him at the time. You know, he felt he was too old for this role, and he got, it's very he claims he didn't, but it's very obvious he got some plastic surgery under the eyes, removed mm-hmm. his iconic mole. It's mole. Gone. Yeah. And, you know, at the time, too, it was very obvious that he's a little older, and the Bond girl in this film was much younger. And at that time, it was said that she was, 26 years old, and her mother was younger than Roger Moore. That has turned out to be debunked. Mm-hmm. Tanya Roberts, who passed away semi-recently, it was revealed that she was actually 10 years older than she had claimed to be.
So damn near 40.
Yeah, she was like 36.
Old lady.
And, you know, Grace Jones did the same thing. That must have, you know, something around that time in, you know, history and film, like, women needed to pretend to be younger than they were.
It wasn't just at that time was when it started phasing out. But it was, I think, like a decade later when people actually started putting their real age, because it was so much easier to have access to that information mm-hmm. and people's real ages were revealed. Shirley Temple didn't know her real birthday until she was 13. She had no idea when she was born because she kept being told, like, oh, you're still 6 years old. Like, I think she thought she was 8. I think when she was 13 years old.
I've heard that.
So it was common practice because it was, you know, who wants an old lady, old bad lady on screen? You know, obviously I don't believe that, but that was the norm for such a mm-hmm. long time, you know?
And, you know, just the opening scene with, you know, James Bond skiing and the Beach Boys blasting, I thought was silly. And, mm-hmm. You know, just some of the finale just comically, like with the dynamite being silly, and at the time I thought Tanya Roberts as Stacy Sutton was awful, and that was the snob in me. Plus the look of this movie is a little weird. It looks like, I don't know, like it was not filmed on film, but like
it feels
made
like
for TV.
The camera was really far away and just zoomed in.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but you know, as time's gone on and I like frequent this movie and revisit it, I'm just able to be more honest with myself, and the honesty is like some of those things that I mentioned and critique that are like definitive, like flaws technically. Honest with myself, I don't care.
Best line in cinema.
I like how this movie is a little campier. I like that. Dang it, what was the first thing I said? Oh, the Roger Moore's like 57. He's too old. Like, he's, I don't care.
Yeah.
I want Pierce Brosnan to come back and play Bond one more time in like a TV show or something.
Uh-huh. Or a movie. We're open.
Yeah. I'm open. I'm available whenever.
I mean, we're open minded, sort of.
Yeah. I don't mind Stacey Sutton. She's not my least favorite. She was at one point in time. Not anymore. Like, doesn't bother me really at all. A lot of like the stunt stuff I like the campiness now. Like, I don't care that it's campy and like cheesy and a little silly. Like, oh, you see Roger Moore's stunt double there.
Yeah.
I think it adds to the charm of what A View to a Kill is.
Do you think also coming with age, Margot, getting older and not accepting, but being proud of the things you like and not being so worried about what other people think of your interests, has that played a role in that?
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, as I always reevaluate my little ranking of my Bond movies, and it will always shift. Nothing will ever be set in stone. But lately I want to like reevaluate and like place higher the ones that just make me more me, or I find more enjoyment with, as opposed to like, you know, Goldfinger's the greatest, so I gotta have it like really high up there. Mm-hmm. But like, I really like Die Another Day. I really like Moonraker. I really like A View to a Kill.
Yes, you do.
So why not have those higher up?
You've always had that influence on me where, you know, when we first met, you were like, I like anime. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think I like anime. I loved anime, but I was too worried to tell people what I liked in fear of being mocked and being cast aside. But why would you ever want the approval of the people who would do that to you? And you've always been the, to me, like the, and to everyone we know now, you're the guy who likes the stuff he likes. You're very confident in telling people these things. You'll defend the Super Mario Brothers movie, the one that everybody thinks is no good, and you're like, it is good. And guess what? We watched it, and it is good. So, haha to all those guys. But this is not what this podcast is about. But all this to say, you have that confidence in what you like, and I think that bringing that into A View to a Kill must have been a very important thing to you, where you're going against the grain, you know, Mr. Little Hipster here, but not for the sake of hipsters.
I went from a snob to a hipster.
Yeah. It's for the sake of just enjoying yourself and enjoying a movie that is nostalgic to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very nice.
And, you know, like, I defend the Super Mario Brothers movie from 1993. I'll defend A View to a Kill from 1985. Like I said, there's a lot of charm to it. There's a lot of fun to be had in its campiness. You know, Christopher Walken as Max Zorin is great.
10 out of 10.
He was the first ever Oscar-winning actor to be in a Bond film.
Not because of the Bond film, but...
But he could.
Yeah.
I'm happiest in the saddle. I don't know if he says it like that.
Yes, he does.
He probably's like, I'm happiest in the saddle.
Foo Fighters.
more power. I love him in this movie. He's got some great lines. He's got a good presence to him.
Do you think they ever walked up to him on set and was like, say the classic James Bond line, and he had to say, his name's Bond, James Bond, and he had to do it with
his name's Bond. James Bond. Something like that.
He'd put the emphasis, because the emphasis is on the name's Bond. So he'd be like, the name's Bond. James Bond.
Yeah. He played a great villain. And, you know, originally he wasn't even offered this role. Originally, it was written in mind for David Bowie. David Bowie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, a few reasons. He opted out of doing this film so he could do Labyrinth.
Great.
And he didn't want to spend like 5 months watching his stunt double do stuff. And he wasn't even a big fan of James Bond movies at the time.
Was Christopher Walken a big fan of James Bond movies?
I don't know.
We should ask
him next
time. He
was a big fan of money. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's a great role, but I might see it as a great role because he plays it. So I don't know. Grace Jones as Mayday is classic, great hench person, and
great hench guy.
Yeah, one of my favorites, if not top 3, maybe 4. Xenia, Oddjob, probably Jaws, and then Mayday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's ever changing too. And reason this film was like special when I was younger, I felt this way about a lot of movies, and you probably hear me say this story a lot, but I was introduced to James Bond because of that GoldenEye video game on Nintendo 64. And one of the playable characters was Mayday. And so for years I saw Mayday and played as Mayday, or you could. And finally I see this movie, probably when I probably saw View to a Kill when I was like 10 or 11. And yeah, I was like, oh, she's in GoldenEye, the video game. So like I had that connection. Same with like Baron Samedi from Live and Let Die and Jaws. When I finally got to see Moonraker, I was like, oh, this is what he's from. And then when I saw Spy Who Loved Me, I'm like, he's in this too. So there's that excitement when I get that connection. I got that from A View to a Kill, so there's always something special about it for me for that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, a small thing, but the fact that it took place in San Francisco in the United States, somewhere that I've, you know, I'm like, that's like right here and not like Atlantis, like undersea, yeah. You know, city from the villain's lair, or Japanese volcano in Japan.
Japanese volcano in Africa.
Getting crazy.
I was going to say like, oh, don't exaggerate. They sent him to the moon. So, you know, he could be anywhere at any time.
They didn't send him to the moon.
That's right.
They sent him to
rake a space. The moon.
Yeah, to rake the moon.
Moonraker about, you know, Gardner.
We haven't gone to that one yet.
So funny.
But I want to ask you, because this was your first time seeing it, and I was excited to show you this film for a few reasons. You know, one being, like I said, notoriously, this is seen as one of the bad ones. Mm-hmm. So I was curious how you would take it. But I have a lot of things I like about it, so I knew you'd share in some of those and have your own opinions, of course. But, you know, we frequent the Andy Warhol Museum here in Pittsburgh, and there's a whole exhibit dedicated to Grace Jones. And, you know, she's in this film, and she brings her energy and her fashion to this film. So I was curious how you would take all that as well. But yes, so A View to a Kill, your first time watching it, what were some of your highlights, thoughts, low points? Go.
What did you think I was gonna think of it?
I thought you were not gonna like this movie.
Why?
I thought you would think the plot is all over the place, messy. I thought you would think maybe some of it's a little boring, some of the action. I thought you might have found Roger Moore being older and Stacy being younger, or Tanya Roberts being younger, you'd find that, like, you know, disgusting. And very misogynistic, perhaps. Yeah, it's felt like, just compared to other Bond movie viewings, that, like, it's not that it's hit or miss, but, like, the ones I, like you said earlier, the ones I think you're not gonna like, you end up liking. So, like, Free Your Eyes Only, for example.
And you are wrong. That was mean, I apologize. I loved it for those reasons, except for the age difference thing. That was yucky, but then turns out it wasn't. So I don't know how I feel about that, because I'm like, well, you know, my point still stands, you know. But, you know, 26 and 57, you know, those are two consenting adults, you know. I don't really care about that. It's gross. I would never, but, you know, I'm not going to yuck someone's yum unless it's illegal. I loved this movie. I loved it so much. I had such a great time watching it. I was immersed the entire time in the plot. I thought it was silly. I thought it was dumb. I thought it was predictable. But if it weren't for Christopher Walken and Grace Jones, I don't think I would have liked this movie. They were the two that really drew me in. And it wasn't in, like, you know, Grace Jones's fashion or like Christopher Walken's goofy voice. It's like, those two characters, you know, the way that they interpreted the characters, the way that they, you can tell Grace Jones worked with the production team. And whether it's like, you told me she worked with the costume director?
I believe so, yeah.
You can tell she just,
for her own pieces.
Yeah, you can just see, like, just the way that she holds herself, the way, the things that she does, lifting a human over her head, you know, stuff like that. It's pretty evident that this actress had, or this artist, more so, is what she is. This artist had a say in her character and how it was portrayed. Same with Christopher Walken. I mean, Christopher Walken's one of the greatest actors of all time. So he's a chameleon actor, in my opinion. And Roger Moore was just Roger Moore. He's growing on me. I used to, if you've been listening for a while, you know that I'm not a Roger Moore person. I was anti-Roger Moore for a while. Now I'm Roger Moore, laissez-faire. I'm like, you can be on TV. That's okay.
Yeah, now I feel like you are like, oh, Roger.
I'm like, oh, classic Roger. Yeah. Kissing like a fish and stuff, you know. Ooh. I wish the viewers could see me do the, you know, lip thing. It's a fish kiss. I don't like it. Yeah, but everything about it was so fun. I love the scene on the Golden Gate Bridge. I thought it was real goofy when, yeah, like you said, on the blimp with the dynamite, the guy's like taking a sweet time to throw it. Why do you have dynamite on the blimp? Why do you have dynamite on the blimp? Throw it. Throw it now. Get it off the blimp. There's no reason for it to be on the blimp, because if you use it on the blimp, you're using it on yourself. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And he was like, one, two. Oh, what's that over there? Oh, I'm going to go wash my hands real quick. Ah, la, 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 la. I'm wearing cowboy boots. Like, you know, it's just like, dude, chuck it. Go now. And then he chucked it and it limp wrists and falls behind him. And he's like, whoa. And then he goes, kapow. And you're like, all right, well, that's stupid, but okay. I'll buy it. I'll take it.
But you love it for that.
I love it. It was so fun. It was making fun of it's fun, but also not in the ironic way. Like, I just had fun watching it, because sometimes you watch things and you're like, it's okay that I don't believe this could happen because it's entertaining. The actual scene of them like on the Golden Gate Bridge with the blimp and everything was exciting. It was fun.
It was, yeah, it was a little nail biting, you know?
Yeah. You're like, what's going to happen? Is he going to die? And then he doesn't. Spoiler alert. The other guy does with the dynamite.
Well, so does Max Zorin. He's like, yeah. Whoops, I slipped.
He Charlie Brown falls, and yeah. That's it. But again, like, you know, he's like, I love my horses, and you're like, okay, weirdo. And then he's like, we're gonna nuke up the horses, but they won't be able to find the stuff I put in them. And then we're just gonna buy that, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And brings back a point that we've made in the past that you and your brother have talked about in the past. I don't need a scientific explanation. I'm not a scientist. If you just tell me, like, this is a magic flying potion and you put it in a movie, I go, okay, I don't need you to tell me about X, Y, Z, the components of the blah, 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 and the di-di-di. Like, I didn't pay attention in science class back in the day when I was an impressionable youth, and now I'm a stubborn adult. I'm not going to pay attention. Just tell me it's magic or it's nuked up horses. I don't care. And that movie did that. It was like, yep, the horses are just... they're just cut. They're just, you know.
They're all juiced up. They're juiced up.
They're the best horses. And I went, okay. And that's I'm happy now.
I do appreciate in that film, it is part of the charm, like I was saying. This movie's kind of all over the place. But they dedicate such a large portion of the runtime to, like, Bond needs to figure out why these horses are winning. Because, you know, something's not right here. And ultimately they do. But it kind of just, it doesn't. Not that it doesn't lead anywhere, it just, like, ends there, and then it's a means to an end. It's like, oh, Zorin's using his microchips to inject his horses with adrenaline, causing them to win. Oh, he's up to no good. Oh, he's using his microchips for this or that, and then it kind of...
Microchips.
What did I say?
No, I just think that's funny.
Okay. Michael. My name's Michael. Michael Chips.
Michael Chips.
He, like, goes to this whole side thing of, like, Zorin's gonna, you know, I'm gonna flood Silicon Valley and, you know, have a monopoly of microchips. Originally, in the script, it was, he was, like, devising microchips to, like, suck down Halley's Comet, and it was gonna crash into Silicon Valley and destroy it. Yeah, they deemed that to be too unrealistic.
No.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. But, yeah. And so they're like, we'll flood it instead. I mean, I buy the you know, the plot, the means to an end, yeah. Like how he's going about it. Like it's like a possibility, in quotes.
It was very Ratigan of him in that blimp.
Ratigan,
if you
know. Oh, in the blimp.
Yeah, he's in the blimp and like, his little henchman pedaling. They're just pedaling, you know, and on their way. A bad guy in a blimp. That's so funny.
Yeah, it's pretty sick. Because
it comes with a ha 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 ha. Like, I got away with it. But did you? Because all it takes is one BB gun to go pew, pew.
Another good line in that blimp that almost doesn't make sense. You even ask, like, what does that mean? I'm like, I don't know. Where Mayday's, they're in the blimp, they look out and they see the Golden Gate Bridge, and she goes, wow, what a view.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, to a kill. And she's like, what is a view to a kill? I'm like, I guess a view, the thing you look at to kill. I don't know.
They I bet they just threw that in because they were like, damn it, we forgot to put the movie name in the movie.
Like, why is it called
What a
this?
View to a kill, look into the camera, wink, kiss, that's that. Also, not just any blimp, a branded blimp. Wasn't there a big Z on there? Or like his name and his social security number?
Yeah.
Crazy. Like, who could have done this? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the guy flying around in that good year. It was them all along.
Right. It's like, who dropped all this shit on the ground? It's like, well, it could be, I don't know, it could be anyone. Look, a Margo blimp. Like, you know, it's like, anyways.
Do you remember a couple years ago, people like were freaking out in, I think it was New Jersey? I think so. Maybe it was somewhere like that. They thought they saw a UFO, and like people are like stopping, getting out of their cars.
It
and, like,
looked like
it.
One.
It did. I even bought them. Like, it's happening. Yeah. But then it just turned and it was a blimp.
Crazy.
Yeah.
We were so excited.
It was just a blimp flying away as opposed to like.
We've only ever seen them to the side.
Yeah.
You know, wherever you're standing. And that's why everyone freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
That's so funny. Cars stopped on the highway and everything.
Yeah. So imagine if Zorn did that.
Yeah, if he stopped on the highway.
He's actually an alien. Now, he was...
he looks like one.
He was like a Nazi experiment, like, bought by the KGB to be, like, trained and... Like, that's what
they call that a nuked-up horse, actually.
Yeah, he himself... Ah, see? Now it makes sense.
He's actually a horse the whole time.
He was a horse the whole time. yeah, like, this plot is, like, there's, like, so many, like, just different facets... And I don't know if it makes sense, but it just makes a big old melting pot.
Yeah.
A little of this, a little of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what would make him even more villain? If he was a Nazi.
Nazis. Honestly.
With a New York accent.
Yeah. Honestly, that's like, nothing makes you want, like, a guy to get his comeuppance more than if he, like, it's like, he's a bad guy, and he's a Nazi. And you're like, get him. Like, it's, you know, seeing the... You know, we're saying that word a lot. Let's, anyways. What was I going to say? Mayday, loved her. Grace Jones, everything about the character, very convincing. Which is unfortunate. It's unfortunate that, you know, there's another character to kind of mirror her. Not mirror her, but like contrast her. Because Stacy was supposed to be the yin and yang. Obviously, she's dumb, period. Very, like,
she's a geologist.
Oh. Yeah, okay, all right. Like, very like, I'm a James Bond. Like, that whole character, weak-minded, and just, you know, not very interesting. Mm-hmm. Versus Mayday is the polar opposite of all that. She's very strong, she's opinionated, and she's a badass. Very physically strong, mentally strong, resilient. And resourceful, very evidently. That's cool. That would be cool if it was like, if Stacy's character didn't just like suck, you know? Because the thing is, the fact that Mayday was so cool made Stacy look even worse.
Maybe that's the ticket there. Maybe that's what...
Well, because then Stacy is like, she's the Bond girl, but you're like, dude, Mayday's so much cooler. Just so much cooler. And then it's great that she's a martyr. I love a martyr. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, why didn't Stacy just get blown up? And then, you know, Mayday just hangs out
and
with,
then
you
Bond
know.
And Mayday end up together.
Yeah.
They do at one point in the film.
Yes,
actually,
do.
This film, fun factoid, of the Eon-based James Bond films, this one has Bond beds the most women in this film.
How many?
Four women.
List them.
At the very beginning, mm-hmm. after he finds a microchip, after his skiing, Beach Boys
thing. That was scene. Fun, too. I don't care what anyone says. That was great.
He gets in that little iceberg submarine. He's like, it's 3 days till we get to wherever.
That's right.
And he's got the Stolies and some caviar and that agent. He beds her. Then he gets with Mayday.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to cover up that he hasn't been out and about. And he's waiting for Mayday to take care of him personally.
Yeah.
Next would be, what's her name? Pola Ivanova, the Russian KGB agent.
Is this the hot tub scene you're talking about?
The hot tub scene, yep. Yeah. And originally that was actually supposed to be Anya, Agent Triple X from The Spy Who Loved Me.
Mm.
But they just couldn't make that work out, so they made up this new character.
Nice.
And then Stacy Sutton, of mm-hmm. course.
Well, good for him. Four. That's more than most people in their entire life. And that's okay.
He's 57 in this film. You know, there's like he's too old. The other Bond film where Bond beds the most women is also four, but it's not Eon. It's Never Say Never Again with Sean Connery, who is also seen as being too old.
The more I hear about that movie, the more I'm convinced it's just a porno.
It we'll get to it someday.
All right. Yeah, or will we?
I have it on VHS.
That's true. So no, we won't. I'm trying to think. Mayday.
Maybe this movie's like better on VHS than on Blu-ray because you don't see
I don't
all
buy
the
it. 4K. It's the only
you
way.
Don't see all the imperfections.
Well, you gotta zone in on the imperfections. That's what's fun. Mayday, badass. Christopher Walken, Zorin, sick as hell. Bond, didn't mind him. Roger Moore. Stacy, dumb.
But you don't care about Stacy.
I don't care. What about? I don't hate her. I'm just kind of like, who cares? There's just, yeah. Like, I'm not here to be like, yes, Stacy sucked. Even though I did say that, like 30 seconds ago. But
I think you did while we were watching it too.
I did say. You know what? I stand by it. I think she kind of sucks.
With her like raspy voice. She's just like James.
Yeah. There's a better role for her. I don't dislike the actress by any means. She was in That 70s Show. She's hilarious. I do really like her in the roles that fit her. This was not it. Damsel in Distress for some people works, but you can't make it look dumb. You know what I mean? Like, you need to make it seem like the circumstances are affecting you, not you're just an idiot and you don't know how to navigate these circumstances.
Makes you wonder, like, originally this role was offered to Priscilla Presley.
Who's that?
She's in The Naked Gun, Elvis's
wife.
She turned it down, claiming scheduling conflicts with the show she was on, Dallas, mm-hmm. at the time. But also, she didn't want to be known as a Bond girl.
You know what? Good for her.
And maybe she read the script and was like,
good for her.
I ain't doing this character. Yeah.
I just think, I don't even think it's the actress's fault. It's the character itself.
Mm.
It really is. It's not good. There's nothing interesting about her. Like, what, she's a geologist? Who cares?
I mean, I'm not...
She breaks a bunch of stuff on accident, and you're like, you dumbass. Pick it up, put it back together.
I'm not gonna like wave the Stacy Sutton flag, you know, but like I said, she's kind of grown on me. I don't mind her, but you're right. She's very just kind of plain Jane, just there to get in trouble and Bond has to save her. Kind of thing.
Just to advance the plot. And I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I understand the characters need to drive the plot, but there comes a point where that's just lazily done.
How did you feel about the Bond ally Tibbet? Do you recall Tibbet?
Nope.
He was when Bond was infiltrating the race like Zorin's house and the race car place.
Yeah.
He took on the guise of Bond's butler when Bond was being James St. John Smythe.
I would like to look. Well, James St. John.
Oh, Tibbet.
No, but what is he? What's his fake name?
St. John Smythe.
St. John Smythe.
Yeah, Tibbet was he like helped Bond like sneak into where Zorin's lab was and.
Where? Hunt is...
He's like, I'm going to get the car washed.
Oh, I vaguely remember him.
And who's Mora? Mayday kills him in the car wash.
Maybe if I spelled his name right.
T-I-B-B-E-T?
E-T-T.
Or I-T?
T-I-B-B-E-T-T. I just put T-I-B-I-T.
Tibbet.
Tibbet.
I like him a lot. He's more famously known for being on the show The Avengers back in the 60s. And I don't know. I find him really funny. His banter between Bond and himself is good. And Bond kind of beats him down.
It's coming back to me now. Yes, I really did like
Bond
that bit.
Bond beats him down with like, oh, Tibbet, I told you to do this. Mm-hmm. Oh, I told you that. Oh, sorry, sir.
When they were in the room together and they're looking for the... I really like that scene. Yes, him also. I attribute to me liking that movie. I loved his back and forth with James Bond. Sorry, it's all coming back to me now. So I'm like, oh, yes, I did really like him. Yeah, very good.
A lot of that was improvised.
No way. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great news. I love that.
Yeah. He's a good Bond ally, in my opinion. There's this one thing in this movie that I really can't defend much. And it's Q's participation in this movie. He's really only there showing off this like little Rocky IV-looking robot. And it's like used
Rocky IV? What do you mean?
Do you remember in Rocky IV? There's that big robot that Rocky gives Polly, like happy birthday, Polly. No?
Oh my God! Yeah, I do.
There's a goofy robot in this with like an extending neck, has like a face with like a camera, and they just had that in there almost just to have Q in the movie.
Yeah. I know
there's a scene that they interact more together with that thing, but yeah, it's really just to like have at the end as like one last gag. In Stacy's house when they're lathering up in the shower.
Yuck.
And Q comes in with the little Rocky IV robot. And
oh, I remember this too. Thank you. Sorry. Yeah. I don't know why. Like, we watch a Bond film and it just does not stick. It doesn't. And then we're talking about it during the podcast.
I loved it, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, I remember liking it. When the movie ended, I looked at you. I was like, I love this.
You did. I was
and
like,
frankly,
really?
I remember enough of it that, like, the names and stuff and the tiny details here and there, of course, no. But, my overall sentiment is I'd much rather rewatch that one than like GoldenEye, to be honest.
What the hell?
I know. Not that I like it more than GoldenEye, but there's this rewatchability in the goofiness. Mm-hmm. Goofiness. That, I don't know. That's just it's cool. It's cozy. Look at that. Well, well, well.
You know, I wouldn't identify as cozy, but a highlight for this film, certainly, the theme song. By Duran Duran. One of your favorites? Meeting you with a view to a kill.
Nope. Probably
until
not.
Until we dance.
What do you think?
I think it's one of the best or better, but not one of my favorites. I listen to it a lot. Like if I'm playing the Bond theme songs, I don't necessarily skip this one.
The thing is, like, there's certain musicians who have participated, I've contributed to the Bond archive, and when I hear, like, is it Duran Duran or is it Ran Duran?
Duran.
Duran Duran, okay. I think of, like, and I'm hungry like the wolf, and I'm like, he can't beat that, and then they tried, and I was like, I don't think you beat that. So I'm just Madonna is a good example of that. Aha is another great example of that. It's not a bad song. I'm just not invested. It's like when you're like going through an album and there's just songs you skip. Those songs would be the songs I skip. But like Shirley Bassey, I only know her for the Bond themes. Mm-hmm. And there's almost like more of an allure. I don't know how to describe that phenomenon because that is something that like happens when like, like, if I heard another Shirley Bassey song that wasn't a Bond theme, I'd probably skip it. But if it was, like, an artist who did a Bond theme, I'd probably skip that because I would want their, like, classics, you know?
You'd skip Skyfall by Adele?
No, I wouldn't. That's an exception. See, now I can't. There's no formula. Criteria. There's no formula. There's no criteria.
You'd
I think
skip
it's just
Writings on the Wall by Sam Smith?
I wouldn't. That's the thing. I don't know. So, frankly.
Who am I?
Yeah. My answer to you is, yeah, it's fine. It's good. It's not bad. Would I skip it? I don't think I would. I don't think I would. Ask me when I'm, you know.
When you've heard it fresh.
Yes.
I'm not the biggest fan of the title sequence, too. Like, you know, every Bond with the theme song has, like, the credits and the naked ladies dancing around with the, you know, cast and director and stuff. This one, they feature, I guess, ladies painted, like, with, like, neon paints, different colors. They're dancing, skiing, and shooting guns and stuff.
I actually liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's never been one of my favorites.
I'm pretty sure I looked over it, and I was like, that was good. And you were like, no.
I didn't say that. I was just like,
then you punched me. No. in the mouth. No. Yeah. So, overall, I walked away very happy with that movie.
Yeah. What was I going to say too? Another fun factoid about this film is, other than that scene where Bond is, like saving Stacy at her house and like shooting up the thugs with a shotgun full of rock salt, this is the only Bond film where Bond doesn't shoot somebody like with a real gun.
Really?
He shoots them with rock salt, but it doesn't kill them. Yeah.
And that, is that like rock salt, like actual salt?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. What does that do?
It'll mess you up, but
really?
It won't kill you, yeah.
We could just do that. I'm joking.
But that's an interesting thing I never really paid attention to. But certainly a fact. There's that great, in my opinion, like almost iconic James Bond scene where they're in the Eiffel Tower and Bond's chasing Mayday up the stairs. And she makes her escape by jumping off the Eiffel Tower and parachuting away.
Badass.
You know, that was a real stunt that someone did. Not CGI, folks. And fun fact about that movie, they had it like lined up that, you know, we'll do a few takes. So they had a couple stunt people set up to do it. Well, they got the shot on the first take. So the other stuntman who was like next in line, like, I'm going to jump off the Eiffel Tower. That's so cool. He was like telling his friends and his family, like, I got hired to jump off the Eiffel Tower. And then they were like, we got it. You're good. You don't have to do it. And he was like devastated. So what did he do? I think it was that night or the next morning. He just went up on his own and did it. He jumped and parachuted away illegally. And the Paris, you know, or what are they called? The Paris
gendarme. No, I don't know.
Whomever.
The police,
the government, the officials, yeah. Were so upset by this like illegal activity of jumping off their Eiffel Tower, that they threatened to like shut down the production. Like you can't film here anymore. It almost like, yeah, caused a big disturbance with the film. So that guy, he got fired too.
Well, I mean, I understand, you know, like the need to feel to do that. But if I was running a production and, you know, you're a stuntman, you're a professional, the big thing about these stunts is safety first, you know,
mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that the stunt person is safe, the environment is safe. The people around you are safe while you're doing these stunts, and that every measure is taken to make sure that you're not, you know, getting mm-hmm. hurt or whatever. And that includes, like, you know, what if he had landed on someone, you know?
Oh, yeah.
What if he landed in traffic? I'm sure he's a professional he knows what to do. But at the same time, like, how, if he wasn't professional enough to just take the idea, he could have gotten paid. He was clearly getting paid too.
Yeah, he got paid. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I get it. You want to be the guy to jump off the Eiffel Tower, but like, you know, put that on your resume, and then they're like, "Oh, cool, you're the guy who's willing to do that. Sweet, let's do it." In the future, but I don't know. I can't say I agree with that too much, because it's
it's a tough one.
If you asked me when I was 18, I would have been like, F the man. Like, you know, you did what you had to do. You know, being an adult who understands liability, I'm like, yeah, that was stupid, dude. Now you're out of a job. Like,
yeah.
Come on.
And I don't know. I haven't read up on this, but like, I imagine he might not have been able to get work after
that. Exactly.
Either.
If I knew you were doing that, it's like, all right, well, what if I say, okay, we're going to light you on fire, but we might need a couple takes, so we're going to have a few guys. It's like, well, I don't want to be the, I don't want you to be the guy who lights himself on fire the next day, you know, like when no one's around, yeah. like, you know, in the middle of like, you know, Tokyo. Like it's not fair. It's not mm-hmm. just about you. And when you're part of these productions, you're part of a bigger thing, and it sucks because a lot of people are mistreated on set, and I don't, you know, and I'm well aware of that. But doing something like that, that's not okay.
Yeah,
you know, it's, you know, you should take a stand for yourself when you need to when you're on set. But mm-hmm. if it's something like you're hired to do a job, you're still gonna get paid. Now, if you wasn't gonna get paid, that's different because it's like, well, you wasted my time. I'm just gonna do it and have fun. But if he was planning on getting paid, I think he should have just taken the money and then just put that on his resume. He showed up, he was professional, and it's like when an actor throws a hissy fit for not getting the lead,
mm-hmm.
You're unlikely to work with that person in the future.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely something I feel this film's like remembered for, like behind the scenes, mm-hmm. as far as like James Bond movies go. It's like, oh, damn. You remember this story of that behind the scenes thing? Speaking of other behind the scenes things, you know, notoriously, the relationship between Roger Moore and Grace Jones was, you know, heated or, you know, rumored to be they didn't get along, things like that. But Grace Jones claimed she just stayed in character and was very, like, you know, aggressive and distant and short-tempered and, like, if Roger asked her to do this or that, she might not have done that. For example, Roger shared a wall with her dressing room and his dressing room, and he would like to take an afternoon nap. And she would love to...
Because he was old.
Yeah. She would love to blast her music. And he asked her, you know, could you please turn it down? Could you please turn it down? And instead, she would turn it up. And this pissed him off, and he would throw a chair against the wall. So, like, stories like that. Whether that's, I think that story is true, but maybe gets exaggerated, like they hated each other.
Yeah.
I'd
get pissed at you if you did that. I was like, I'm sleeping. And you were like, I'm just going to blast that scene from, what's the car scene that you always play?
Quantum of Solace.
Quantum of Solace. I'd be like, hey, listen, I'm not going to throw a chair at the wall, but don't do that.
Test the sound bar.
Right, exactly. Like that's one of those things that's like, you can get pissed at someone and still like them,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, Grace Jones would go on to say, you know, her experience on that set working with Roger is like one of the best of her life and has a lot of respect for him and learned a lot from him. And Roger Moore, you know, he has said, whether jokingly or not, like, if you have nothing nice to say about someone, don't say it at all. But, you know, on set he had good times with her, you know, in the that scene where they have to sleep together, he put a pair of bloomers on his head to like ease the tension. And I've read, I don't know if this is true or not, but she disrobes, and the rumor was she was wearing like a big strap on.
Oh ho,
like woohoo,
that's funny. But that's the thing, it's like, I don't know, I feel like there's always a lot of pressure for actors to get along. He never had to act with her ever again. So if they didn't get along, I'm okay with it. And also, their characters didn't get along. So
yeah.
I don't like method acting. If the method acting is what's getting in the way of your relationships with your peers, that's the problem, period. I think it's, if there's an understanding of like, okay, I'm going to do method. Like if you're going to act with Daniel Day-Lewis, I'm sure the first person to act with him when he was method was like, what is wrong with this guy? But now you can anticipate it.
Yeah.
If you're new in the game, or not new, but like you're just really starting off, you know, acting, let people know, hey, I'm method. So this is what my character does. This is what I can expect. If I take it too far, I need you to do X, Y, Z. And then that'll indicate to me, like, I need to direct my character in a different direction, or not a different direction, but a different attention, or direct my character's attention somewhere else. I don't like it when people are just like, well, I punched you because I'm method. I'm like, okay, well, I'll serial kill you because I'm method acting as a serial killer. Like, what are you talking about? That's not, you can't do that. Being rude is being rude. And, you know, I understand it helps with some people's performance, but who was it who told Daniel Day-Lewis, you ever thought of just acting?
It was to Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman. I like that. Where he? Oh, to Dustin Hoffman?
To Dustin Hoffman.
But who was it who said that?
Laurence Olivier?
Cool. I see, like that, I'm like, yes, just act, just act, you know? But again, I can't, you know, I'm not an actor. Can't tell you how to do your job, but just don't ruin the experience for other people without the expectation, you know?
I'm faux method myself.
You love method.
I love faux method. Not all the way, just while you're doing
it. If one day you get the chance to do full method, you would do it.
I'll do it.
And that's okay, as long as you set the expectation. This is what you can, this is what I will do. This is da-da-da. If I get too carried away, I need you to do X, Y, Z to divert my character's attention away from you. Mm-hmm. Or away from the negativity. I hope you never do. I can't imagine. Can you imagine? Like, Daniel Day-Lewis's wife.
Yeah, she was living with President Lincoln for awful. Like a year.
And the guy from There Will Be Blood.
Yeah. And apparently, when he was in Last of the Mohicans, he lived in a teepee.
Stupid. Anyways. You have a $1 million house, and you're like, I'm going to go sleep in a hut. Like,
hey, that sounds kind of nice.
Yeah, all right. If you know, sorry. I need to cut it that one. It sounds nice. Yes, of course. You know, I'm not knocking the hut, but, you know, it's like, just, you know, be thankful for the things you have and, like, don't rub it in people's face that it's like, I slept outside my massive backyard, you know, to method as a homeless man. It's like, yeah, there's actual homeless people out there. Like, why don't you knock it off, man? Like,
he makes shoes.
Who?
Daniel Day-Lewis.
He makes shoes now?
That's what he does.
Ah, good for him. I bet it's $10,000 a pair.
Yeah, probably. They're Italian. Lives in Italy and makes them.
Good for him.
You know,
and I don't dislike him. It sounds like I dislike him. I don't think I would want to be friends with him. Not that he'd want to be friends with me. Who are we kidding?
Would you be friends with Roger Moore?
I don't know. Maybe.
Would you be friends with... Well,
if he was nice, yeah.
He is nice.
Okay. Yeah, why not?
Would you be friends with Christopher Walken?
I would love to.
Would you hang out with Christopher Walken?
I think
Walken?
I'd enjoy it. I think we'd be good neighbors.
Mm.
I think we'd be good, like, we only talk every once in a while, but he's out in the yard, and I say, hey, Chris, Tiffer. And he goes, Mago.
Is that how he says it?
I don't know. He said, because kids say my name, Mago. I imagine it's something like that.
Mago.
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 Mago. How are you? And I go, this and that. He goes, have you ever acted with an actor mouse? And I go, I have mice upstairs. And he goes, show me. And I say, here they are. And that's that. And then we go months without talking. And yeah, I think I'd be a good neighbor to Christopher Walken. We'd have fun. But not too much, you know. We wouldn't get carried away. He'd mind his business. I'd mind mine, you know. Trim the hedges.
Your common ground is mice. And you just, that's
yeah,
what
he loves
about.
Mice. I love mice. It's cool. He's like, they're very smart. I'm like, yeah, I know that. Watch what this one can do. I'm actually just a homeless guy. He thinks I'm his neighbor. I'm just hanging out.
Speaking of smart, and just to transition.
Yeah, sorry. How did I get on?
Another fun fact of this movie that I found fascinating. Mm-hmm. You remember in the movie Argo, Ben Affleck's character. Argo's based on a true story.
Argo F yourself, that's yeah. Right.
He played Tony Mendez, a CIA agent. In real life, his superior went and saw this movie, A View to a Kill. And upon seeing it, there's that scene where Max Zorn is like searching a type of horse breed for Bond, like St. John Smythe. And while he's doing that, he's actually scanning Bond's face, and he's doing like a facial recognition, getting all kinds of information on him. This guy, the superior, he went to Tony Mendez and he said, do we have that? And he's like, no, we don't. He's like, we'll make it. And they went and developed facial recognition.
That's crazy.
Profiling.
It's like when post-apocalyptic stuff comes to like real life. Like mm-hmm. Yeah, Elon Musk is like, so we put like a fake brain inside someone else's brain and it looks like they can't remember their mother's name, but everything else is fine. And we're like, this seems suspicious, but that's so funny. Anyways.
I was like, that's nothing like that at
yes,
all.
Yes, it is. It's, you see that in a movie and then we see it in real life and we go, whoa, guys, come on. This is, it's funny that the CIA guy was like, wait, that's the villain's thing? Let's do that. And you're like, well, okay. Hold on, guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found that fascinating.
It's like if you're watching Avengers and you're like, Thanos' glove, can we make that? And you're like, no, dude, that's not good.
Like, we should find a way to make a stone that alters reality.
Yeah, it just blows, just kills people. Oh, that's Margo. That's a real thing. So, anyways. I'm going to stretch real quick. Oh, man.
Also fascinating to me, this is obviously Roger Moore's last outing as James Bond. It was also Lois Maxwell's final appearance as Miss Moneypenny.
Who took over after her?
Oh, I couldn't tell you her name.
Some whatever.
She was in the two Timothy Dalton films, of course.
I don't remember her.
Yeah, she didn't have too much to do. She's there. But then I can tell you in the Pierce Brosnan era, it was an actress named Samantha Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And then
what?
Yeah.
Her name was Samantha Bond?
Mm-hmm.
Like MI6 agent 007 James Bond?
Is James Bond's sister.
That's crazy.
Samantha.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, like born to play, right? And then
and then she did nothing after that, so.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And then Naomi Harris, of course, plays her now, currently. So yeah, I think she did like 14 of these movies. And this was her last go, and she was in that big pink hat at the horse races.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, you know, those are just some fun facts about A View to a Kill. It's infamous. It's known for being one of the worst. I think there's a cult following brewing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm leading the cult following, but I'm in it.
I
think
I am, because I liked it from the start.
That's true.
I'm OG.
You didn't have your snob phase with it.
I'm a nostalgic for it. No, I'm not. I'm a novice for it because I'm like, oh, this is funny. This is fun. Yeah, because I didn't have... It was my first go in liking it.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. I didn't have my nostalgic moment yet.
It's campy. It has, a solid, if not great, Bond theme song. It has a great Bond villain and hench person. Maybe a below-average Bond girl.
Yes.
The music in this film. I wanted to speak on that specifically, but the music is really good by John Barry, you know.
Very good stuff. He did Rocky, right?
No, that's Bill Conti. He did For Your Eyes Only.
He did For Your Eyes Only. Yeah. Okay.
You know, but all this makes for the movie that it is, and I appreciate this movie for what it is. I like to celebrate these movies. When Margo and I watch a Bond film, we do a little dinner and a movie, right? So I made just a little hors d'oeuvre, a little smoked salmon with some caviar. We had a little Stolies to honor the beginning. We had some quiche de cabinet, the meal Bond makes for Stacy. We made in real life.
It's funny because I like quiche Lorraine because that's what I grew up with. And he was like, I'm making quiche. And I was like, that's great news. And it wasn't quiche Lorraine. And I went, what? Yeah!
What the hell is this?
I did eat it, and I enjoyed it very much.
And when it came up on the TV, I did the, Rick Dalton, whistle point. And then I made just a little clam chowder because they were in San Francisco.
That's good stuff. Yeah.
Little clam chowder.
That's right.
So I like making these like food memories that we consume while we watch. It like adds to the immersion, and I keep saying it, but I'll keep saying it. It increases my enjoyment of these movies we're watching because I have like that memory association now. But then also I have with all these movies, I'll keep saying this too, I have these memory associations with you. I get to share these movies with you. This is your first time watching A View to a Kill. And I'm glad it was well received.
Mm-hmm.
Is this movie for the novice or the nostalgic?
I will say it is.
Excuse me.
I think it's for the nostalgic. And I have great news for you guys. I think I'm slowly making my way over to the nostalgic. And the reason I say it's for the nostalgic is because the tropes, the campiness, you have to appreciate Bond to appreciate this movie. You can be a snob all you want. At the end of the day, it's a boatload of fun. And all the stuff that doesn't make sense, the penny whistle with the car flying that one movie is the same as the Beach Boys ski scene. Why is it there? It'd be so much better even if there was no music, would be so much better. But it's funny and it's iconic. It's iconic, and that's why it's for the nostalgic. And also, I think I'm still a novice. Sorry, guys. Never mind.
I agree with you. Exactly with what you said. Well, of this movie being a for the nostalgia. Yeah. Yeah, it's not one I would introduce to anybody, their first, second, third, fourth, or fifth Bond film. You know what I mean? And to really even find some appreciation with this, I do think you have to see some other Bond films first. Unless you're younger and this is like the one you grew up with. It was like the first one. Well, that would make it nostalgic, of course. But yeah. That's, I think the verdict is in.
And that's my line. Oh, the verdict is in. It's for the nostalgic.
A View to a Kill. 40th anniversary as of this recording. Celebrating this film.
We post it next year.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
But hey, Margo, where can our listeners find us on that social media stuff?
You can find us on Instagram and only Instagram at A Good Squeeze, where, you know, we're just having a little bit of fun posting some stuff, episode updates, life updates, things we're up to. We are dipping our toe in that sweet, sweet water of the Bond community. That was poorly put, but that's okay.
The Bond community, is that what you want to say?
The pool of the Bond community is what we're doing. Anyways, Angostura Bitters.
And to that point, we do post little videos of maybe like cocktails. And specifically, we made a May Day. You can enjoy a May Day that you can find on our Instagram and watch A View to a Kill.
Go check it out on our Instagram. We, like you said, we made the cocktail. Well, we is a stretch. You made the cocktail. But you can expect these videos in the near future becoming a regular thing. It was very fun to make.
And then you can also find us on like Audio Boom. And this is if you want to listen to us by finding us. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, we're there. Audio Boom's main hub. Spotify, Google Play, Apple Pod, you name it.
Yeah.
Come find it.
That's right. And on that note, I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And this has been
A Good Squeeze.
Oh, that's funny.
I just thought of it right then and there.
So good.
Can you believe
it? Do it again. Do we have time?
Get Zorin for me.